Apparently the same incident is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 8.1, 4 through 18. Okay, so here then, this first verse, then this Ishvashya principle that everybody has a quota, there's rules that are to be followed, that the human being must be engaged properly according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That's what makes him special. So that sense control, that focus, that attention that is being given according to Shastra, that is his quota, right? Then along with that, then what are the particular physical facilities necessary in this world? Then one also is using them according to one's nature, right? Not outside the Lord's laws. If one does this, then everything will work nicely. But the main principle is to recognize the Lord, right? If we don't recognize the Lord, there's a problem, right? Because it's all his. He's the one that makes the material energy work. We think the dead matter is all happening on its own. Nothing is happening on its own. Because the Lord glanced at the material energy. Then it's all working. But we also have to understand is what is the form of this glance. Right? From Brahma Samhita, then it's described. Right? Also in other places, that this glance then is Sadashiv. Right? So the concept of false ego, right? And therefore time or activity based on that false ego, then is manifest. So that entering the pradhan, then it changes to mahat-tattva. Right? So these living entities then, under the influence of ignorance, then they perform activities in this world. Right? But they're thinking that actually it is their own energy, or the material energy is itself, stands on its own. But in actuality, it doesn't function on its own. So it's still working. No matter how mundane we think it is, it's still the Lord's potency that makes it work. So without acknowledging that, then that is neglecting this Ishvashya principle. Because he is the Isha. He is the controller. So that's the whole point. Ishvashya means who is the actual controller of everything. So understanding that, then everything starts to work in our life. Right? Starts to work very nicely. Okay. Mantra 2. If the human beings properly employ the Ishvashya concept, their actions will not bind them to the material world, and they will realize the personality of Godhead. Right? So this is your thesis here. Right? Now, that if you apply that in your life, you will not be caught up, you will get free. Right? So in other words, action is what creates a result. So either getting bound or getting freed from the material energy is done through action. So if the action is done with the Ishvashya principle, you are freed. If it's not done with it, you are bound. Right? Very, very simple point. Is that it's always through action, right? We tend to think, wow, this is a new concept. Because of this principle that we mentioned before, is that we come into this world, it's through that principle of tamasi, right? The Lord in that form then puts the living entities in ignorance, because that's the basis of material existence, is ignorance, right? We're ignorant of our relationship with Godhead, right? We're ignorant of that, therefore we're not paying attention, therefore we're brought here, right? So remember before, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, the Tathasta Shakti is on the border between the internal and the external. On the internal potency side, right? But the tendency is not to be looking towards the internal potency, since you're right on the edge. Right? You're looking out, like if you're on a boat and you're sitting on the edge, you look at the water. Right? So that's the point. And then the water, if there's land on the other side, you're more interested in that than what's on the boat. So that's the problem. Right. The living entity has not paid attention to the Lord and the internal potency. Therefore, he's looking at what's on the other side. And so that's Maya. So that ignorance then is what brings us here. Right. Does that make sense? So it's very simple of giving up that ignorance, right, which means inaction. We act. Right? And that action is therefore acknowledging Krishna's supremacy in the whole concept. We will be freed from material contamination. He's not saying what action. He says their actions will not bind them. So it's not saying only the brahmachari's actions or the sannyasi's actions. right, or only the Brahman's actions. No, any action that is performed according to God's laws with him in mind frees you from material contamination. So that means anyone, anywhere within the Varnashram system or the Pancharatrik system or any system that they are following that's in connection with the Lord, then this principle is there. One will be freed from the material contamination. Does that make sense? But the main point is that it's in connection with Krishna. So that means freedom from material energy comes as a, how do you say, a side of, just a derivative, right, of performing devotional service. Right, so the focus is on the devotional service. Freedom from material contamination will come. Does that make sense? So the focus is not on becoming free from material contamination. Otherwise, as we saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur was pointing out, is performing action without desire for the result, it brings that action of karma immediately to jnana. So it's naishkarmya, but it's the lowest level of naishkarmya. It's not considered that devotional, because one is simply trying to free oneself from material contamination. But when the focus is more on the activity I'm doing, the result of it gets a result, that result then is given to Krishna, that's considered better, right? Because then there's renunciation of the fruits. But when it comes to the actual principle of sannyasa, you're simply trying to please Krishna through your activities. So that means automatically the, how you say, the result is there and the mood of the performance of the action. Understand? What makes the difference in these three? Right? Because the first one, you're focusing on the action, not interested in the results. So that will free you from material energy. But it's not that devotional. Though it may be very popular that it's very devotional, but it's not. Right? But that same thing, it doesn't mean that naishkarmya is useless. It means, but naishkarmya going to the next level means now you're looking at the result. You don't mind dealing with the result because it's for Krishna. Right? Why can't you deal with the result on the first platform? What's the reason?
You're still attached.
Yes, you're going to say. You're still attached to it, so therefore you don't deal with it. So just, I'm not attached, I'm doing the service, you know, it's Krishna's service, I'm just doing it like that. But the focus is on doing the activity with detachment, which is good. It's already in. It's already considered nishkam, not sakam. So it's already good. Right? But it's just focusing on the element of being detached. Therefore, it's considered the lesser of the three levels of naishkarmya. Right? Then the next stage, because it's just naishkarmya, there's no result, right? You're not interested. Then the karmarpana, then you're going to perform the activity that the result you want for Krishna. That means you're even more detached, because now I can actually deal with the result. But it's not for me. But I'm still doing the activity. It gets the result. I'm giving the result to Krishna. So even though it's not sakam, it follows the same formula as sakam, where you perform it. It's my result. Then I give it to Krishna. Right? It's still renunciation. Right? Well, nishkam, the first one, is just neutral. Right? It's not sakam, so it doesn't have that fault. But it hasn't become dynamic, really, in devotional application. Does that make sense? Right. Then this karma yoga that he mentioned, you know, or it's also called karma swarup, where the karma is in its natural form of just being done to please Krishna. So therefore now the performance of the action also is being done to please Krishna. Right? So it's not just the results for I perform the karma, focusing on that, and then the result I give to Krishna. It's now, while performing the activity, I'm thinking of Krishna, and the result already is Krishna's, because that's why I'm doing it. So then it has the element of sannyas. Does that make sense? Do we catch what's going on here? Because this is using that same principle of that you have within a principle, it also divides down into the same principles of that group. You know, you have sambandha abhideya prayojana. You can take sambandha and divide it into sambandha abhideya prayojana. Right? And you can take one of those parts, divide it into sambandha abhideya prayojana. Right? So depending on how you're looking at it. Right? So we're looking at it that Krishna said, there's karma, I mean, there's renunciation and there's sannyas. So renunciation means you renounce the fruit of your action for Krishna. Sannyas means you don't consider it yours in the first place. Right? So it's nothing to renounce because it's not yours. Right? Does that make sense? So we will take, the one is, that would be along the line of sakam, and then the other is nishkam. Right? Or one is, would be using pravriti, one would be using nivriti. Right? We're using these terms. So this is the bigger principle. This is the main principle in this, this would be the main form of this principle. But now it still applies even in this lesser things. Now if you take, now in this case, we're taking nishkam.
Right?
And so of that means we're doing it now, the sannyas aspect. Now with that, still within that, then there's the element where I'm focusing on not being attached to a result, or I'm giving that result to Krishna, or the result's already Krishna's, and I'm focusing on doing the work nicely for Krishna. Right? So it has that same flavor between of the renunciation and sannyas. Now within there, then there's more sannyas. So in other words, there's sannyas, or there's chag sannyas. Right? And then the first stage is just neutral. It's the sandhi between the two of sannyas and renunciation. Does this make sense? Right? So this is we're supposed to be able to learn to deal with these topics so that we can understand the level that we're applying it at, because the principle always remains, right? Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur then explains rasa. The principle of rasa does not change whether it's spiritual, emotional, or sensual. The mechanics of it are the same, right? Just like your car, if you're driving it down to the supermarket, you know, it functions the same way as if you're driving it to the temple. Right? Is it go, you work differently? The pistons move in a different way, the spark plugs are different. Right? You know. Now you know the pedals and the steering wheel, it works differently because it's spiritual. No. Right? Because actually that form that we call material is a reflection of the original form, which is spiritual. Not the other way around. We take it from here that these forms here are the actual forms. Then we learn these are not real, so then the spiritual world must be something different. Right? But that's the impersonal contamination. No, the forms here are a reflection of there. Just the forms here aren't that great. Right? The forms there are in their natural position. Does that make sense? So one's always going for, so the same way rasa doesn't change. You still have the ashray and the vishay, right? So whether it's between Krishna and the devotees, whether it's between persons of this world following the principles of religion and then the emotions that evokes, or whether it's the senses and sense objects, is still following the same principle, right? You still have the controller and the enjoyer, right? And what is controlled and enjoyed. Does that make sense? But we see one is the sensual is inferior and is never glorified, right? Because it's so temporary. By the time you glorify it, it's gone. You know, so there's nothing left. There's nothing you can't. You glorify something that's present. You can't glorify something that's gone, right? So that's the difficulty. But emotional, that will last a lifetime. So there's something worth glorifying there. But still, it only lasts a lifetime. Right? Or if you're very pious, maybe a few lifetimes. But still, it's temporary. But devotional service, that bhakti to Krishna, that's eternal. So that's the best. That's the best form of rasa. Does that make sense? So in the same way, we distinguish that then the activities don't change whether they're spiritual or material. Right? What changes is the whole consciousness and everything behind it. Does that make sense? So that's why we tend towards what is the form in this world that you call pious activities or varnashram. Because it's the reflection of what goes on in the spiritual world. So if we're talking about spiritual culture versus material culture, then what are we actually discussing? Right? The spiritual world, they follow the culture there. How it reflects into the material world, that we should use that for Krishna. The perversion of that is not as important. You know what I'm saying? So we can't take it that the Varnashram, being the reflection, is the material. And then the perversion of that material, then that's okay. Does that make sense? I'm saying that home-cooked meal is not good. But if I go out and buy fast foods, that's okay. You understand? Don't get it? Yeah. We can't do that. That would not be logical. The point is the home-cooked food should be offered to Krishna. Right? Then your material piety is in its proper form. Right? It means they're cooking for Krishna in the spiritual world. What they cook in the spiritual world, that's the whole principle that we're working on here. That natural form then is done for Krishna, because you can also do it not for Krishna. That's why the reflection is here. You want to play around not with Krishna, play with the reflection. You're not going to get a hold of the original. Right? It's just not going to happen. Right? Krishna won't allow it. The internal potency is not going to allow it. So it's not going to happen. Maya's dead matter. She doesn't care if you, you know, play around with her, because she's not going to notice it. It's dead matter. You know what I'm saying? It's nothing to get insulted. You can't insult a brick. You know what I'm saying? But if the brick's conscious, then the brick wants to be dealt with how it likes to be dealt with. And since it's Krishna's brick, because it's conscious, therefore it wants to be used for Krishna. And if you use it not, it'll be a problem. So it's just not going to happen. Right? So this natural form of using the same reflected thing that's here in this world for Krishna, that's the proper form. Now the perversions of that can be used for Krishna, but to say that those are exclusively to be used, and to say that the actual natural reflection, that is can't be used. That would not be logical. That's not intelligent. Right? So intelligent people should not speak like this. Does that make sense? It's not a good platform. So the difficulty comes is that we have to understand is that spiritual means it's connected to Krishna. That's spiritual culture. Material means it's not connected to Krishna. Right? That's the meaning. Varnashram is not mundane. It's mundane if you don't use it for Krishna. Use it for Krishna's devotional service. Not that the Varnashram is the devotional service, that you're using it for Krishna's devotional service. So it can be used either way. Anything in this world can be used either way. Right? Does that make sense? So the West doesn't have a monopoly on only its stuff can be used for Krishna. Does that make sense? So what we're having to do is make a distinction here in the principles, the fine principles. Otherwise, we will make these kind of mistakes. Because we can't actually see what's going on inside. Right? We can't actually see the technical mechanics of what is at function. We simply get caught up with words, right? And if we're caught up with words, what platform will that put us on? Right? There's a term for this material world in relationship to this principle.
The world of names.
Yeah, the world of names. So if all we're caught up in is the names and the semantics of the word, then it is mundane. Does that make sense? It is of this world. Because the point is the words are carrying a thought. So that thought is what you have to be understanding. You understand that thought, you have actually understood the words. You don't understand the thought, you did not understand the words. Right? It doesn't work like that. Does that make sense? Like that. The same principle then, of course, has its even more, you know, grosser manifestation in, you know, how you say, the husband understanding the words of the wife. If he takes it that the exact word she says is what is the point she's communicating, he's missed the point. Right? Words are used as a medium for what the point they're trying to say. Very rare do the two match. But if they do match, nice. But if they don't, then the point is to figure it out. So that's why intelligence must be used. Right? So this kind of intelligence works on all levels. Sometimes people say, well, this is very nice, theoretical. What about real life? We're saying, you don't understand this. You don't have a life, let alone talk about real life. You just don't have a life. Right? Life begins with understanding this, because this is how the creation functions. It's God's creation, not ours. Right? And so, therefore, we understand this, then we will not be bound. Right? So the idea is to develop this very simple point, where we catch it in this example, but then in another example, we'll not catch it. Right? So that's the idea of again and again it's gone over from different angles and perspectives. And by that, gradually we start to put it together, because this is a new concept for us. Right? We've been in the material world since time immemorial. There's been a consistent concept that I am the controller and enjoyer. So therefore we're going to perceive everything of the world through that vision. Now we're learning that I'm not the controller and enjoyer, someone else is. So it's not me that makes things happen. Someone else is making it. I work with it, that's why it's happening. No, it's already happening. We get to take part in it. Right? The carousel's already going around. You just happen to hop up. You're not making the little horses go up and down on the carousel. They're going up and down anyway. But because you're sitting there, you think, I'm making it happen. I'm making the carousel go around. Does that make sense? So it's just getting used to this new concept. Because it's new, because it's only there in devotional service, then it's difficult to understand. And therefore, it takes a lot to... means we can understand it, of course. I mean, say intellectually, but to be able to bring it to the point of practicalness, that's where it gets a little bit slow. Because we understand, okay, that's how you'd apply it here, but then just move it one increment, then we don't see how it applies. So the idea is we keep discussing it in so many ways, trying to practice it, and after a while, then that vision broadens to the point where at all times, all places, all circumstances, we see Krishna's involvement. We see our connection to Krishna and the action connected to Krishna, the results connected to Krishna. Right? So it's just time and practice. Right? With the proper knowledge and practice, then everything comes. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to do here. So it's not a matter of I understand, it's a matter of I know how to use it. I can apply it. When that comes, then, you know, we can stop blabbering about the same thing over and over again. Right? But until that comes, then we need to hear. Right? You know, how many times Prabhupada said we're not this body, right? And how many times we find that we're working on the bodily platform. Right? So it's just a matter of repetition, then we start to. But the idea of vichar is you don't hear it in the same way. You hear it from different angles, because then you think it's new. Otherwise, if it's old, heard that, been there, done that. You know, that new bhaktas, yeah, they talk about that stuff. But, you know, the point is we're still trying to figure out we're not the body. Right? You know, after 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, so... Does that make sense? So that's why it's there, giving from different perspectives. So we think it's a completely different point. No, it's a different perspective on the same point. Right? Chit Ishwara. In other words, Krishna, the living entities, and the material nature, and their relationship. So it's all different perspectives on that. Right? That makes sense? Yes? Okay, now going on from this point. Actions caused by selfish motives bring about good or bad reactions. All right, so now we're giving your reasons here. Both of them keep the conditioned soul trapped in the material world. On the other hand, when the activity is done according to the Lord's order and for His pleasure, it never produces material results, neither positive or negative. Action by itself is not bad, provided the performer has the right consciousness. Right? So we're trying to make this distinction. It's not the action that's bad. It's the consciousness by which it's performed. Right? He'll probably give us the example is the man goes out on his own, kills somebody, then he gets put in jail. But if he's part of the army and there's a war, he's fighting for the government, he can kill so many people, he gets a medal for it. Right? But it's the same killing. So it's the whole, it's the authority and the consciousness. Does that make sense? That's what changes it. So this point, then we start to distinguish, then we can distinguish why something was done. Why, you know, then you can actually decide whether it's good or bad, or how good or how bad. All right? Otherwise, how do you distinguish? How do you distinguish your own actions? How do you distinguish actions of others?
And also, who does he, if a butcher...
If a butcher, okay, what if...
There's something else that, like if a hunter kills the animal completely instead of just heart killing, that's pious for him. But if a Brahmin does the same thing, that's impious.
It's not his duty. It's not the Brahmin's business to go out hunting. Right?
Yeah, but if he does that, impious. Also, this defines what is good, what is bad.
Yeah, no, but that's what we said before, is that before it was that you are performing your quota. In other words, your activities, your position, your activities, and the facilities that go with that activities. So, therefore, the Brahmin is not his business to be hunting. So it's not his to do, it's someone else's. That's the Kshatriya's. Right? How many Brahmins are out in the forest? Many or not so many?
These days?
Not these days, but in general. Who stays out in the forest? The Brahmins or the Kshatriyas?
Brahmins.
Okay. So that means by volume there's more Brahmins out in the forest. Okay?
Yes.
Now the Kshatriya will go out in the forest occasionally and then hunt. Right? So that's one Kshatriya out hunting. And he can only do it occasionally. Right? Otherwise, you know, there's no animals. So you can imagine all those Brahmins who are out in the forest who stay out there all the time if they're hunting. Will there be anything left? No. Right? So even just practically, it's not their duty. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is that when we say your quota, that means, you know, what it is to be done by your body, mind, and words, and what facilities you have to get that done. So the things go together. It means you can't perform an activity without the field of action. Right? Does that make sense? So the thing is you're defining that field of action. Right? Because any result will again become field of action. Right? All prayojana always moves back to sambandha. Right? Yes? Yes. So that means you have to describe these two things, the field of action and the action itself. So much of the time we start with the field of action, therefore we discuss it like that. But sometimes you forget there's the action itself. Because otherwise, why have the field? Your quota, but if you don't do something with it, why have it? This car is your quota. If you don't use that car, what's the use of having it? Right? Does that make sense? So, the and in there, it's better to perform someone your own duty that may have fault than someone else's. So that means the action itself is also something that is akin to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like if, you, let's say, someone was going to do some service. It's a festival day, you know, and someone was going to, let's say, come and... bring the deity stuff into the deity room, right? But then somebody else, very enthusiastic, came and did it first. What would the person who was supposed to do that think about the service? Right? He'll think, you stole my service. Right? So the stealing doesn't just mean that, you know, it's 3D. Right? It's the field and the action that goes with that field. So they match. Does that make sense? So that's what it's trying to be pointing out, is that you have to be able to distinguish, the two go together naturally, but at the same time it's important to be able to distinguish them also. Because sometimes an action has the wrong, an action having the wrong, an action that would naturally we would categorize, because it's not our quota, as not good, right? Then the mentality we would naturally say goes along with it. But it may be that it's not there. Does that make sense? So that would be the thing. Let us say we're sitting there, right? And we have our chudder. And then the person next to us somehow or another catches on fire. You know, maybe they're doing meditation, who knows what. You know? So then somebody comes and, you know, sees the fire, and without finding anything else to put it out with, sees your chudder. Right? Grabs your chudder, wraps it around that person, puts out the fire. So even though you technically say that he stole your chudder, because of the application, would you call it stealing? No. Okay? That's why it's important to be able to tell the difference between the field of action and the action itself and the mentality that goes with it, right? Because when we say action, we always include the consciousness, right? Because action without proper consciousness won't be good action, right? So all of that has to be put together. The field, the action itself, and the mentality or knowledge and everything that goes along with it, right? And then we also know that in that mentality we'll also have the fine point of the prayojana. Who's the prayojana for? Right? So unless you can distinguish the field itself, the action, you know, the action is performed, and the mentality, you won't be able to understand what's going on. So even more we can say is because the field means a particular action will be done. So if you don't understand the field and you don't understand the mentality, you can't understand. So therefore, if somebody we consider bad, we will always say the mentality is bad. Right? We just do it automatically, whether it is or not. Or their actions are bad. Something we would have to just automatically say to make the package bad. But that's why common law is dealt with by people who are qualified, not the common person. Right? The law is not in the hands of the people because they don't know how to apply it. Those who are trained and qualified, they apply it. Does that make sense? Because it takes qualities, it takes knowledge, it takes that. Someone who has that does well. Someone who doesn't have it, they do a very, very bad job. Does that make sense? So it's just giving practical understanding is that in our day-to-day life, we see people, we judge them. Right? Where there's good or bad, their actions and everything. But unless you can distinguish these points, how can you actually judge if it's good or bad? On what principle are you judging it? Your own interests? Your own liking? Your own opinion? Right? Then it will be a problem. So it has to be based on God's order and the mentality he says that goes along with that. So then that is the proper application. Does that make sense? So these things are very practical in our lives. And as we said, generally in a class like this, people are not always comfortable with. But since much of the time people say the philosophy is not practical, and that's why it's not very popular, right? You know, in the far, you know, managers and that, it's not popular because it's not practical. But the point is, your relationships with other people and your relationships with your family, you don't understand these and can't make this distinction, they don't work. Because it's God's laws. So even take this, understanding, even on the most basic, we would call this very esoteric material stuff. Right? But it doesn't work. Because the gross is always based on the subtle. You don't understand the subtle, you will not be able to manage the gross. And the only way you can manage the gross, that it kind of works and gets basically a good result, is if you're following some kind of proper habit. Right? And generally, proper habit is called tradition. Right? You found this works, therefore you hand that down to the next person, then it becomes tradition. But what is tradition? It's what worked. You know what I'm saying? So that's why these things are here. So that tradition then comes down from Krishna having spoken it, then it comes down to the great personalities, then they speak it and practice it, then that comes down to the great personalities that are more contemporary with us, and their practice of it, that's what's then given to us. Make sense? But even in that is given to us, that's still not enough. You still have to be able to distinguish these two so that you're not performing the proper activities of this tradition with an improper mentality. Right? You may be following all these nice things that are handed down to us with a fruitive mentality. Right? Or in a mentality that's separate from Krishna. Does that make sense? Then it doesn't work. And then we wonder what happened. And because we can't distinguish, then we will say the form is the problem. Therefore, the tradition is the problem. Right? Therefore, tradition is mundane and spiritual something else. Right? But what is this something else? Mother Yashoda doesn't cook in a pot on a fire and stirs it with a spoon? Right? She makes the chaunce differently. Right? She just throws the, looks at the ghee and the spices and they all come together, and then after cooking properly, then it goes into the sabji or something? Or, right? Like that. The real rahasya is they don't tell you about the little wand that she has when she does all the cooking. Does that make sense? No, it's the same thing. So that's the point, is we're getting used to that. There is only one thing. It's God's creation. It functions in the same way. You deal with it in one way, you get a spiritual result. You deal in another, you get a mundane result. So mundane is simply a perspective. It's not a reality. It's a reality that exists, but if one is in the mundane concept, one is illusory about actually what's real. Because real is this God's world. It's God's universe. God's creation. Right? Does this make sense? Right? So the idea is that then we can practically start to use these things in our life at all levels. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not just we start with the grosser, of course, because that's where we practice. What's obvious to us is where we started. And that's fine. It doesn't matter. But the point is after that, by contemplation, one should be able to see subtler and subtler, aspects of it, so that one can broaden the application, right? Because not everything in one's life is gross, right? Some things are very obvious, but some things are very subtle. So to be able to use them there means the subtler we can understand the philosophy, and its application is the culture. Then the more our lives on all levels will work better. That makes sense? Yeah? Okay. Yes?
How to distinguish the misuse of the principle, because some people, they may do some kind of subtle.
They may do some kind of subtle. The point is it's, you have to just see the result. Because, especially when you bring up senior devotees saying this, that, what does it matter to you? You have to practice it in the right way. So they're saying they're doing it in the right way. You know, you just accept that. You know, they're saying that they're devoting devotional activities. And as far as you can see, basically it looks like that. How can you tell otherwise? So then you leave it at that. But for yourself, you're seeing, you know how you think. You apply it there. Self-realization means it starts with yourself, not someone else's self. Does that make sense? Then it's safe. Otherwise, you'll spend all your time trying to figure out if everybody else, and only if everybody else is doing it right, then you can do right. But why are you doing it that way? Because you're in the illusion that I am independent and I am controlling the situation. When if you can only perform devotional service if everybody else does, means you're dependent. Right? And since you're not in a position to get everybody else to do, because you're criticizing, not preaching, therefore it doesn't work from any side. So then what's the next thing that comes? From criticism comes bitterness. From bitterness means you distance yourself. You stop associating with devotees. And then what happens? Right? So it's not a very useful thing. Because the point is you give charity to somebody, just an ordinary person, you'll get the equal amount back in the future. But if you give charity to someone who claims to be a Brahmin, though he's not, you get double. You know what I'm saying? So by just the senior devotee says, I'm doing this, and just accepting that, you get the benefit of double that of what it would be on a normal situation. Now, if they actually are doing it, then you get a lot more. You understand? But the point is for yourself, it doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? Everybody else on the temples in Maya, if you chant your japa nicely, it doesn't really matter to you. Technically. You can say, oh, the influence of this, that. But that's, you allow it to be influenced. You don't like it, go somewhere else and chant. You know, they're all in Maya in the temple, go out in the backyard and chant. They're all in the backyard, you stay in the temple and chant. You know what I'm saying? So the point is the individual makes their determination, I'm going back to Godhead, despite everybody else, then it will happen. Right? And if everybody thinks like that, you have something very dynamic. But if each one thinks, well, I can't get together because the leadership is not together, then nothing's going to happen. Right? Why are there rich men in the world? Because everybody else in the world's rich, so therefore they got it together and they become the top 5 billionaires, right? No, it's because despite everybody else losing money and being poor, they decided that they were going to follow the principles of economics until they got it right. And when they got it right, they're successful. And the other people are still just as poor. Does that make sense? So that's why then the action, the mentality, what should be done, that's what you worry about for yourself. And don't worry about the leadership. There are leaders to worry about the leadership. Right? You know what I'm saying? You're not going to change it, so therefore why worry about it? Others that can change it, it's their business to worry about it. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Okay. Something else on this? Right? Nothing else? Action by itself is not bad, provided the performer has the right consciousness. Quote, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. Bhagavad Gita 8:7. Right? So the whole change is he's fighting before, but what makes the difference now? Because he's fighting for Krishna. That means his intelligence, the mind and intelligence, and dedication of the activities are on Krishna. Right? So the mind is the desire, the need. The intelligence is the field and how the technicalities of the field work and the action works. Right? Then that activities dedicated to me, that is the activity is the abhideya, the dedication is the prayojana. Right? And also the mind deals with both sambandha and prayojana, and the experience of what's happening in the abhideya. So you can see is just by saying this, everything is mentioned. Right? Activities dedicated to me, mind and intelligence fixed on me. So he said everything in sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. So it's complete. So it's not just another point he's making. It's the same point being made from this angle. You know? So that means dedication, intelligence, and mind fixed, that goes together. Because when there's dedication means there's focus. So that means to be doing that, the mind has to be agreeable. Right? And the intelligence is being used properly. Right? So you could be focused in the mind and intelligence, but it's not dedicated to Krishna. It's dedicated to the one you love, right? Which is yourself. Right? So then that's something else. Does that make sense? Right? So then this is taking it to the next level. Because if the mind and intelligence are fixed, then you get results. But that result then has to be dedicated to Krishna. Right? Then it's complete. So this is the point is that if you understand this very clearly, the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan, you can see that what's going on here. Otherwise it's just another verse. But the point is you're supposed to take this, contemplate it. Okay, what does that mean? Why did he put together this dedication to me, mind and intelligence fixed? Why that group? Because that group goes together. You put them together, you get results. Right? And then think of Krishna, right? Think of me in the form of Krishna, at the same time carry out your prescribed duty. So that means is that then you're going to come to him, because if you just you perform your prescribed duty, seeing Krishna in the form of Brahman or Paramatma, then it'll get you out of the material world, but it won't get you to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So these things are very specific. But he's already mentioned before, he spent 3 chapters talking about how he's in the material creation as Brahman, or how he's pervading everything as Paramatma. So he's giving it as a stepping stone. But the point is now, come to the point where you are able to do it, where you're connecting it to Bhagavan. Right? So on that level, then dedicating to him, then it becomes very dynamic. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so then we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki Yes. Excuse me, there's Haribo, there's one announcement he's making on the essays for those who are here.
We've got half the essays back from the registered students. Pandav Bandav has your essay. You can get it back from him, review it, and then resubmit it. Those who haven't put in their essays, please contemplate what you just heard from Maharaj about Sambandha Abhideya Parojana and submit an essay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.